Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You are about to listen to the Dork Forest. Let's give you the info about it. First of all, you know the websites. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, if you like a determiner, JackieCation.com has everything. All of my podcasts, including videos of my stand-up schedule, merchandise you can purchase if you would like, and a lot more info than you possibly even need. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and produced and composed that song at the beginning of the show. He sang with his wife, Sarah. It's very beautiful. At the end of the program, he sings his version of the Mexican Hat Dance. That's Mike Rickberg. Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He is the web designer over there. And Patrick Brady fixes the audio. And in this case, there's a video intro. Very exciting. Anyway, those are the websites. If you want to support the show, you're doing it already by listening to it or watching it. And another way is to tell your friends and family, go on iTunes, do a review. Another way is to just give me money. Yeah. You could go use the donate button. You can make it even monthly if you're okay with making things monthly. You do a PayPal monthly. There's a monthly choice on PayPal. The PayPal is a button on the Jackie Cation or the Dork Forest website, and it goes directly to me. Thank you very much. I will use it wisely or foolishly. Your call as well. Now, my email address, jackie@jackiecation.com, is where you can contact me if you have any questions or concerns and about the Dork Forest. And I do have a Venmo account. It's jackie-cation, oddly enough. Another way to support the show is on dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. There's an Amazon link. And the Amazon link just takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show because you came from Jackie Cation or dorkforest.com. Very exciting. Other than that, there is a Bandcamp. You can, if you have listened to all the episodes that are free and you need more content, there are several live episodes that are at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And those cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album there that you can listen to some stories that I did live. And there are 17 free episodes before the Dork Forest was pre-recorded. So the audio isn't very good, but the guests were super funny and fun and dorky. So if you want to do that, go to thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's see if there are other things that I should be talking about. Possibly the merch. Yeah, if you want to buy merch. The only other thing I want to talk about is the merch. You can get Dork Forest t-shirts, and you can get stand-up comedy t-shirts. You can get my albums or my DVD over at jackiecation.com/merch. There's pins, there's a challenge coin, there's a bunch of new things happening over there. Anyway, a lot of information. I don't think I've missed anything, but who cares? Let's get into the show. Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. I am in my home talking over Zoom to people about their dorkdoms. Welcome to the Dork Forest. Andy wants you.
Hello.
Ooh, and this is exciting. We barely know each other, though your face is so familiar that I know that we've met at least three times. You do the stand-up comedy. You're Andy I. Wancio on Twitter and Instagram.
Correct. I'm a former comic of the week of Jackie and Laurie.
Right. There's a credit right there. Here's the comic of the week bump. Who doesn't want that? I would like that, quite honestly, if it would do anything. And this is fun. It's always fun to get people. Rangers, you'll be happy to know that this is about dance music. It's a music episode, but it's about dance music, so I'm not expected to know anything about dance music, because I dance only when no one is watching. Andy, do you dance?
Yes, I do.
Do you love to dance?
Yes, I do. It helps me keep rhythm, and it helps me keep up in rhythm, and it's how I found my love of dance music is dancing. I don't much anymore because I'm getting slightly older, and all my previous dance moves are catching up with me.
That, who knew that was a thing? But it does make sense. When I think back in the 12th century, when there was some breakdancing, those people, are they still breakdancing? We want to know. Are they on the ground? Are they kicking their legs up in the air? Is it happening? We don't know.
Yeah, it's still happening. That, my focus was in robot and doing robot moves and strobing, and liquid is this type of dancing.
Liquid was a type of dancing?
It is, still is. It's this.
Oh, it's sort of, it works with the robot.
Yeah.
It's super fluid.
Yeah.
That's why they call it liquid. It's fluid moves. Is it only with your hands?
It's your whole body as well.
You can, you sort of shimmer your whole body in a liquidy kind of fashion?
Yeah. You line up each one of your joints and learn to move them individually in a popping motion, and then slowly build up liquid motion out of that.
Oh, that's quite, you know what that is? That is instructive. I kind of love how instructive that is. That is necessary if I'm going to ever learn how to do liquid dancing. So now, dance, of course, the history and dance music.
Yeah,
this is a great segue because your dorkdom was dance music, and yeah. I was like, all right. And you said you had some history of dance music to talk. People have been dancing forever, though, right?
Yeah, I love all of it. I once told a comic, a very funny comic, Brent Flyberg. I said I'm a DJ, and then he said, "Are you one of the wicka wicka or one of the oonts oonts?" And I got upset because of how accurate that is.
That really does. Because I'll tell you something. I recognize both of those. That's I know exactly what he's talking about. Which are you? The second?
I'm a little bit of both. I spend...
Well, there you go.
It's like left brain and right brain. Left brain and right brain. So go
don't
ahead.
Don't put you in a box. Don't put you in a box. You can do it all. Might as well, right?
Yeah. That leads me to my first fun note about the history of dance music.
Yes, please.
Now, scratching is the wicka wicka. I do a little bit of it. One of the things I use is when I was a Jackie and Laurie comic of the week, you all talked about my name and how to spell my name and saying my name several times, both of you.
Oh,
and
I bet.
Use that as a DJ drop in my sets before and scratched with it. I think I tagged you in one of the videos on Instagram.
Is awesome.
And it's funny because it's like got Kyle spelling it out, and then I scratch each time he tries to spell it out. Laurie said something in the middle of it. She gave me a compliment, but then she said, her last name has all of the vowels. And so that's a pull quote in my bio.
That is a pull quote in your bio, is that Laurie Kilmartin thinks that Y is not is also in your name.
And
that's interesting, she thinks that there's a Y in your name. No, all of a sudden I got competitive. Okay. So
so the history, I've taught DJing for many years, about 10 years.
Okay.
And I taught privately to adults, but then I've taught about 6 or 7 years. I taught kids all the way to adults in a mixed class.
And
part of it is teaching the history of DJing. Now, scratching is the wicka wicka.
Yep.
It's done with a turntable, but the invention of scratching comes from a DJ by the name of, I think he's Grand Wizard Theodore. He's
okay.
A lot of the original hip hop DJs would use names like out of a Freemasonry, like Grand Wizard or Grand Master. It comes from like Kung Fu or whatever. Theodore is the name of the kid. He was legitimately, I think, 8 years old, and he was messing around with his turntable. You know, moving the vinyl, like, he had his grandmother yelled at him to turn it down, And so he put his hand on the vinyl to yell back down that he would. And that's when he heard a scratch with his hand on
the
vinyl.
When he was 8 years old?
Yes. And then it became like a novelty act at part of a DJ crew. There would become like a part of the night where you'd have this little kid step up on a milk crate and wicka wicka. And
oh. And what year is this?
I want to say...
That's a great story to tell 8-year-olds who want to be DJs, by the way. Because they're like, yeah, we can change the world. And
one milk crate at a time. I
need a boost.
I think it was 83, and I try to be that boost.
Yeah, right?
There's the teacher in me coming out.
Yeah, you should be the boost. We should all be the boost. So you think it was 83? You don't think there was scratching in the 70s with the original hip hop people?
No, there weren't.
Because they were just doing rap, maybe.
It starts with, so the patter of rap comes from DJs on radio, kind of like talking very fast in a rhythmic fashion. And then other than that, it comes from several places at once. One place is in Jamaica, you have people called toasters, and they're the ones that kind of riff and kind of just do a DJ patter with a little bit of rhyming over top of instrumentals. And you'd have a huge sound system that would travel from town to town, and then you would have a party, and there'd be that toaster. So they would toast over top.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so some of it was that, and some of it was DJing on the radio. And then the rhyming just sort of came of itself, just because who doesn't want to rhyme when they're talking about
it? It slowly comes up. I mean, the earliest quote-unquote star of that is a disco R&B act dude by the name of Curtis Blow. And he's the one that, he's pretty much the grandfather of U.S. rap, if you'd have to say, to a lot
right.
of people.
Right, or he was certainly, and if anybody has other names, he was early. Leave her alone. So Curtis Blow, who I've actually heard of for some reason, probably has some famous songs. It's probably all working out for him.
The song is The Breaks by Curtis Blow.
Oh, okay. And that's what it was known as. Okay. So you teach kids DJing. Does it mean that you have to break it down? So do you teach them how to scratch?
Yes. I use a digital controller. Just something that plugs into a computer. So not real turntables.
Have you ever done real turntable scratching?
Yeah.
What albums do you ruin by doing that?
Well, it's not too bad because I got a tiny portable turntable that's meant for scratching. It looks like a Fisher-Price turntable, but it's meant for scratching, and there's specific records, but you also go digging for... I have one that's all audio from sports,
and
because back in the day, you'd have to, like, you couldn't, you know, you'd listen to the radio to hear sports, but you couldn't hear it back. So it was a record of just important moments in sports history. So a lot of boxing, and sometimes people, you know, sing the Pledge of Allegiance and just all of this. It's like Muhammad Ali, like rambling and.
Okay, so you would, when you scratch though. So I've always wanted to ask these questions. So I'm going to.
Go ahead.
So you have an album. It's on a turntable. The needle is going. You're going wicka 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 wicka. Scratch scratch. Oh my god! Please, somebody make that into a ringtone. You're embarrassed for me.
I'm going to use you describing that and scratch with it. I will do that and tag you in the video.
Thank you very much. And so it's gonna be this. So you move the album under the needle to make the scratching noise.
Correct.
ruining both the needle and the album, correct?
Well, it depends on the amount. Like, you have specific albums that you buy that have better grooves in them for doing it. And they have, they're like kind of sound effects records. And they'll have, okay, they'll have a whoosh or a dude saying,
oh, cause
fresh. And that's a famous noise.
Oh, so you're
noise.
Looking for, you're looking for a clip, kind of, when
yes.
you scratch?
Exactly.
So the scratch itself is just a byproduct of that?
Correct.
It goes screech and then fresh or
yeah.
whatever. And that's interesting. Okay, that I did not know that either. So
and so to tell where that clip is on a record, because the record's so just like just a black surface with grooves, you would use, what people used to use is those little round paper reinforcement stickers you would use in the edge of loose leaf paper when it tore. They
okay.
would use that and put it directly on the record. You'd put it next to where the sound is so that it could just put the needle right there.
Oh, so you could find it quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so they're not only scratching up this album, they're also putting stickers on it, and they're like, this is but you'd have to listen to it, because there's no time code, right, with an album. You'd have to listen to it and go, that's the word, sticker, scratch, fresh, or whatever.
Oh.
Or animal crackers, or whatever you want them to say.
Animal crackers? That's not something. Can I get
anybody?
Can I get a raw animal crackers? Just say animal crackers.
Animal crackers.
Okay, I'm going to scratch with that, too.
I feel used, and somehow I'm enjoying it. Okay, so.
But, yeah, you would look for, and what's funny is that you would have to, sometimes people, since you are going to scratch up the record, you look for bargain bin stuff. So
right.
You spend a lot of time digging, and people have different. Either I have a pretty good knowledge of dance music, so I know to look for producers or certain labels or artists. But sometimes people are just like, I can tell that a record's going to be good for a certain kind of music if all the dudes have beards.
So you're some people just judge a book by its cover.
Correct.
And you're judging it by the liner notes. Interesting. So who are the producers because with dance music, there are musicians and then there are producers, or are the producers the musicians, or does it bleed over? Is it not happening?
It would be like your the thing that producers learn and dance music producers learn and are more fine-tuned with is rhythm. So, like, you're basically a drummer, and then you move on to playing keyboards. It's kind of like you learn one, then you get the other.
Oh, and, okay.
You can be a musician about it, or you can just be very rhythmic about it.
Okay, so with some music, the music is almost entirely the rhythm and
yep.
sampling and stuff like that. And is that the EDM thing that we were talking about?
So, I am 38.
And why does your screen name say Linus Nieder?
That's my partner. I renamed
okay.
it.
Because I just realized that I didn't rename it.
That's my name on the streets.
Right, because we are talking with Andy Wansio. Okay, go ahead.
Linus Nieder is my partner, and
the Zoom account. Go.
But the in general, like I'm 38, and so
okay.
I've been DJing for 20 years, and
okay.
I found dance music when I was in high school, about high school, 95, 96, and so the permutations of it over time, I've like kept track of and learned each new genre as it's appeared. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten more jaded. And there's these terms that people use to just say the entirety of dance music. One of
okay.
them would have been electronica.
Okay.
Another one of them is techno.
Right.
Another one is house music. People call just all dance music house music. And the most recent one is EDM. Now, when people say EDM, it's a specific genre, but if you read it out, electronic dance music, that describes every genre.
Right, unless it's acoustic dance music.
Right.
And is there ADM, acoustic dance music?
No, there was IDM, which is intelligent dance music. That was like 97, 98.
What earmarked that IDM? What does that look like?
Completely ridiculously complex time signatures, not unlike jazz musicians, that kind of like, I don't know, put on hold kind of music.
So when you say that your dorkdom is dance music, you're talking about all of those kind of things, whether it's electronic or house or, I mean, the things are specific, but on the whole, it is sort of an electric, I mean, you're not waltzing, right? You're not going to see a chamber orchestra and hoping that they play a 4/4 waltz.
And some of it is just playing Motown, or playing soul music or playing R&B music, just playing it just because I like it.
Right.
Yeah, there's just about, I try to be informed about every genre, because I was teaching kids, and I have to learn new genres that the kids were bringing in. And
right, so, you need to know what the YouTube, what's the latest craze in music on YouTube? What's happening? What was happening 3 years ago that I probably never heard of?
Well, I mean, EDM is still, like, it's kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. It's even old people music to a certain younger kids. But
sure.
They've gotten back into house music. They really like many things that I think kids are getting into. They like minimalist kind of things. Very stripped down. Not just a lot of nuts and bolts. Just simple kind of music that sounds raw, and they see that as heart or some sort of like respect for the genre, the like older artists in a way.
Okay, those are all words, things that are raw and stripped down. Is there any house music that I would recognize? What are the lyrics like? There lyrics on?
There are a lot about, well, I mean, like, that's an interesting one, is that, like, when you hear a thing that people, there's lots of things. So, sampling, you always hear the staples you always hear from 90s dance music were just sci-fi clips.
Okay.
Clips from old 50s sci-fi movies. Mm-hmm. Like, the alien cannot contain us, and then some big bass noise.
Okay.
And the reason was that they were all in the public domain. Nobody was going to come after them for having those.
Right, but right.
In the disco era, gay men listened to disco a lot of the time. There's, even today, not much dance music where a male voice is talking about loving another man. There's so little. And the reality is that in the disco era, things like Weather Girls, It's Raining Men, like they aren't women, but they agreed with the tone and the message of it. They feel like the tone of the message is like them singing it, and they identify with that. And that was the thing about disco, and then as it's gone forward, like, the lyrics don't mean too much.
Okay. So it's more about the beat, and so when something is stripped down, is it literally, I don't know.
It's...
and what is the dance move for that? That's why I've brought you here, Andy, is to make you laugh at my lack of musical dance knowledge. This is another classic musical episode where I don't know things. Last month it was I didn't know who was in Fleetwood Mac. So it could be anything. It could be anything.
I can tell from the number of miniatures behind your head on this Zoom call that it would take me more than an hour to tell you how to dance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do what I consider some physical movement to music, and no one needs to be party to it. So it's best when I do it alone. But is there, you know, like, I've been to weddings where they've some sort of, like, there's from music videos that, so the kids have learned something, the children of the bride and groom or the you know, the aunts and uncles of the world, mm-hmm. Will bring their children, and these children will have these moves from, you know, whether it's,
That's kind of where my disconnect is. That's kind of where I, like, where my jaded being an old rave grandma, as I call myself, that's where I end. I'm not going on TikTok. I don't play Fortnite. And I don't, like, K-pop, like, Korean pop music is huge, and there's so many dances associated with that, too. And that is all out of my reach. I know about it, but...
Right, and there's wells that you haven't gone down, right? So it's really hard to make that, to know everything. There's just absolutely no way. There just isn't. And so what is a rave? What the hell is a rave? Hey, Grandma, tell me what a rave is.
The term rave comes from... it was mostly a thing where, like, it was a term for dancing way back in the day. Even in the times of, like, juke joints and, even back to
speakeasies,
Motown.
Speakeasies back in the speakeasy days?
even back to then, people would rave on meant to just be energetically dancing. And so
is it a lot of jumping up and down, or is it got to be, because you said that what you like about the dance is the rhythm, right? And keeping your rhythm, sort of knowing where the beat is and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason I know so many genres of dance music is, like, I've played different genres over time and, like, grown out of them or kind of became jaded about them if the trends of that genre are just annoying, then I don't really want to follow it through. And I don't do it to... I love it, but I don't do it to be, like, famous at it. So playing the trendy stuff is not really necessarily my bag, really.
Do you think that it's sort of a normal thing? Like, it's like with any dorkdom or anything that you love a lot where you get into one kind of it and then you're like, well, now I'm saturated. I've had enough of this kind of whatever. They've stopped talking to me about dragons, or, you know, in my case, right? And I'm like, I get it. Yeah, there's dragons. Fantastic. Anyway,
how many people
are
you boring with dragon talk on your day-to-day life that it's a go-to example?
You would be surprised.
I'm not. Again, like, we were talking before, my partner, the aforementioned Linus Nieder, uses this Zoom account to play D&D with children for a living.
For a living. And that is an amazing... I have to look into that. I just finished an amazing D&D. But so my thing is about music is that you listen to, like... 100 people work the same 16 bars, right? Mm-hmm. Is that when you get jaded? What is it? What makes you kind of go, well, no, I love it, but I'm just kind of over it.
I can illustrate that with the music that I'm into now. I am into a genre called drum and bass.
Drum and bass. I'm writing it down.
Get ready to write down the other word, which is the origins of it come from a genre called jungle.
Okay.
And it was again part of the toasting the Jamaican culture in England kind of got more and more into sparser bits of drums, but it was born out of a very specific. So the breakdowns of the song were like old Motown songs. They would have a breakdown where there'd be a drum part where dancers started really like that part. They really like that, like 25 seconds where a drummer's just getting very funky on anything, like a disco song and like just old soul. And this guy by the name of his name is DJ Kool Herc. He was a Jamaican DJ who came to New York, and he had the idea that like he liked that. He was like, people like these parts of the song, so I'm just going to play them one after another. He wouldn't mix them. He would just play the part of the song people liked.
The best parts of several songs?
Right. And he would just do it in a row.
I love that. That's awesome.
There's a group by the name of the Winstons. They're a soul group kind of born out of playing at mass. They were played a lot of churches. They were a church band in the South. And I could be getting this all wrong, because the part I do know is they put out a record, 7-inch record, in, I want to say, the early 70s. And it wasn't a hit, but the B-side, the like lesser known side of it, was a song called, it was called Amen. And it was a cover of the song, Amen, you know, just the hymn.
Okay. Oh, right, yeah.
In the middle of the song is 10 seconds of a drum solo. And it is the most sampled drum solo of all time. It's 10 seconds, and it's been sampled. It was sampled in hip-hop in the 80s, hip-hop in the 90s. And then it has its own genre just called Amen. The Amen break is as it's known. And so the Amen break is the focus of Jungle. Like, people just really loved it. So they started slicing up the drums and making these complex rhythms. And then the move away from sampling is the move into drum and bass. And drum and bass actually gets its name from Jamaican music, which would be sparse so that somebody could toast over top. They were like very sparse songs so that people could provide melodies, or it became a thing called rhythms. The rhythms would just be like a beat that 8 or 9 different people would have a cover of that song, and they would make their version of that song. Drum and bass goes on, and lately it's been, the best way to describe it is it will be like really good, and then all of a sudden it goes wah, like legitimately that sound, and they refer to it as foghorn because it sounds like a foghorn. And I'm not a huge fan of it. I like the very vocal drum and bass.
Pretty. And are they at any time, because you said they went from sampling to something else, are they playing the drums? Is anyone playing the drums here?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes they have people come in and play like synthesized drums, or sometimes they'll have them play the drums, then they sample the drums themselves.
Okay.
A lot of the people who make this dance music can drum, or the better ones can, but... Now I'm kind of like disenfranchised with a certain sound, and
so you like the more original sort of drum and bass part of it, and less when they went to foghorn. Yeah. And you're like, you just harshed my buzz, man. I don't want to dance to foghorn. And
there's this like male attitude in drum and bass that also happened in dubstep. When you had Lorraine Newman on, she spoke of bro step. And bro step is just really heavy dubstep that's, I don't know, dudes punch in the air about it.
Remind me what dubstep was.
Dubstep is, she didn't really go into it, but it's a sound that another permutation of jungle and drum and bass that came out of England, and it came from completely pushing down the rhythm until it was just super bassy and super spacey with the sounds.
Is it, if it were a wave, would it just be one giant thick wave?
It would be like a wah wah wah, and then there'd be a rhythm in the background that's just
really?
Yeah, there's some really good dubstep that I think you would enjoy.
That feels like an ambitious statement. Though I will be asking you for an eight song Spotify list at the end of this. Music episodes, I would like an 8 song Spotify list so that I can listen and go, oh yeah, I don't get it. Anyway, or I kind of like it.
People at that time just really appreciated how low the bass was, but it wasn't anything huge. It was just like, oh, this is really great. And when you're standing in front of a loud sound system and you hear the bass, you're not only hearing it, you're feeling it.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge part of it. Like, it's bass heavy, but it's not aggressive. It was more like
interesting,
giving you like a back rub than being aggressive. But as masculine, like, I attribute masculinity as being like the, people are like, I need my bass to be more aggressive. And so
right, it got more aggro and you were like, that's not the part that you liked because it was just a little dude bro-y. So
yeah, you see the same escalation in waves of comedy as it goes up and something becomes more trite and maybe aggressive. And then
right, well, there's just a certain brand of and there's a market for it. I mean, there's people that enjoy that kind of energy, and it's and it quite honestly is being made for them. But let's backpedal to this question. You're standing in front of one of those giant speakers.
Yeah.
How's your hearing?
Well,
damaged.
My hearing's not too bad because I don't really go out too much anymore. I like the idea of friends sitting around in a living room listening to good music that I'm playing, as opposed to being like, I need 1,000 people at my whim. But I have played to 1,000 people. But at a certain level, it becomes just like you need to play the most popular things to not lose them.
Yeah.
In the same way that you can hear jokes kind of go out, laughs go out and back in a theater, you can see the heads of the people out in the crowd stop moving.
And that's your first clue to, oh, that clearly not hitting.
And
that's kind of fascinating.
I grew up playing a lot of anime conventions because I'm a huge nerd. And so playing science fiction conventions and anime conventions was something I did for a long time. But the point I wanted to make is that I played at a club in D.C. that's not around anymore. But there is a school for the deaf nearby, a famous school for the deaf. And the deaf folks would come in and just be all the way almost up next to the bass bins because they could hear the music and dance to it. Like, they could feel the music and dance to it. It's actually a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you, when you're sitting around with friends and you're not DJing for a party or for, by the way, excellent thing to hide behind at a party, by the way, holy shit, well played. It's my party skills are nil. If I had a task, yes. And, but if you're just sitting around the house, will you listen to dance music?
Yeah, I will. Generally, I'll play it when I have this like agreement with my neighbor where I mostly am loud on the weekends for a couple hours.
Okay.
And, but for the most part,
it gets pretty loud.
Not really. It's just thin walls. I don't like super loud because I'm so worried about my neighbors being bothered about it.
Yeah. You're just a thoughtful. Yeah. You're trying not to drive your neighbors mad. And fair enough.
And I suggest if you're looking for that same trying to make distance with people at parties, I suggest embroidery. If you could embroider a live, laugh, love in a little hoop, I think that'll keep anyone away from you at a party.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have a problem eventually sending people away.
Embroider it's, like no one is watching. Because they're not.
They are not. And it's, I went to a wedding, and there was a wedding DJ. And have you ever DJed a wedding?
I have for my friends.
That's the way, they'd have to know what they were getting into, right?
Wedding DJs are the people who make the most money DJing in the world. They get paid hand over fist, and not only comedy, we do a lot of gigs for free before you eventually get paid. And the same is not true of wedding DJs who just get gigs out of the gate, and there's like 10 things people want, and then they play them, and then that's really it. But
right, so it's not sort of real DJing. I'm sure that it's real DJing.
Yeah,
because it's you're disc jockeying, but it's there's different levels to it, obviously, and there's the level where you play what is handed to you, essentially a pile of MP3s or discs or whatever, and then there's where you're curating what you know you're sort of you're mixing. You know, I've been to clubs where they mix two songs together, right? And that can be, I mean, that seems really hard to figure out where those two beats go together, especially with CDs back in the 90s, where you're like, how do you even know where that is? There's no dot. You can't put a grommet.
I grew up more playing digital music because there's a a music format known as a module. It is a just kind of like a sound file with, imagine that it has some sounds in it, a file has sounds in it, and then a little sheet music for it to play back.
Oh.
And I found that first. There's an old computer by the name of the Amiga. It was not popular here, but is very popular in Finland. And I found that I found websites of people making the music, and that's how I found it. And it was, I've mostly loved vinyl. Vinyl has never been really a huge part of my DJing. It's all been digital. And for me to pretend like vinyl is a huge part of my world would be a lie. And
you don't want to live that lie. And it's also a really useless lie. Because I can't possibly. I mean, I suppose that there are, you know, in all of these things, there's people who judge, right?
Yeah.
And I do it too. I mean, everybody, you know, it's technically stand-up comedy. Is it stand-up comedy? But it's not, I've sort of just left it as, it's not for me. Some people like it. And that has to be.
That's so dismissive, Jackie. You could say that about anything.
And I think I do. I mean, and people do it to me. I mean, there's just like, it's not, I mean, for example, and this blends into just stand-up comedy talk, but Andrew Dice Clay is not for me. But he's not actually performing for me either. I don't think. Do you think he's performing for me?
No, I'm just imagining you as a children's art teacher, and there's the parrots come up, and you're standing in front of it. You're like, yeah, that's Timmy's piece right there. It's not for me.
Yeah, you're actually in a different place with where I'm coming from. I'm not, you're in teacher mode. At no time would I ever say to a child or to someone super new. First of all, people who are super new in stand-up comedy don't, I mean, don't ask for my opinion. I mean, because my only opinion will be, keep doing it. Are you having fun? Then do it.
I once asked a comedian who I've since become better friends with, Ngayo. I once asked him to watch one of my sets, and he watches me. And then after the set, he goes, "How long have you been doing comedy?" And I was like, I told him however many years that was, maybe like 4 or 5. And then he just walked away. It was the nicest thing he could say.
The first time I saw Dana Gould, I ate it. And as I walked by him, as I got off stage, and he was literally one of my, I would say, 3 favorite comics in the country, in the world. And as I walked past him, I had done so poorly, he fleetingly made eye contact with me and then blessedly looked away. So it was it was the nicest thing he could do in the moment.
That's him saying, it's not for me.
No, that's him saying, that didn't go well. You know that. We don't need to talk about it. And it was it's more of an adult kind of way you would talk to another adult in your profession. If you are a teacher and someone is, and you are trying to teach people to do this thing, you better have some compassion and some empathy and just words of encouragement. And I mean, the thing is people will always love different things, right? I mean, if you're teaching teenagers how to DJ, and you're going to run into what that is, right?
Yeah.
You're going to, and what they're into and what that looks like and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sort of talk to them if it's nothing that you would ever enjoy? Like, they just want to DJ K-pop, and you're like, okay.
When I have, like, a list of about 25 songs that I will teach kids how to play every genre that I love and then see what they like. And they have a deep respect for dance music history. A lot of kids do. That's, like, the most amazing thing about dance music is that, like, if you're in it long enough, having a knowledge about the roots of it or about the intricacies of it is, like, expected of you.
What are the intricacies of it? Because as a layman, looking at it from outside, it doesn't feel super complex, but I'm sure it is, because if it's rhythm, it can be anything, right?
You have different tiny, if you can imagine, different parts of the world have different genres of dance music that come about for different reasons.
Example me.
One would be, there's a genre of music called Belgian New Beat. It was popular in the latter part of the 80s, if I remember correctly. And certain genres are definitely shaped by drug use. And that one was, opiates were a huge thing. So they would pitch records down. They would slow them almost all the way down, and the effect.
This Belgian thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the, like, effect is that, like, a song that normally was, like, just, you know, it could be a rock song even, but, like, when you slow it down, all of it becomes a slow motion, like, and it does create some interesting things by slowing some music down. Incredibly, you, like, all of these new sounds kind of come out of it, and that's kind of what happened with dubstep. It was slowing down music that had gotten too fast, and certain kinds of dubstep are more just about, like, just enjoyable melodic music, and then it slowly ramps up and becomes just aggressive rock music, basically,
right? That's interesting, yeah.
But that's definitely, I will teach kids how to play dubstep, but then I don't really listen to it at all. And
right, a lot of stuff isn't for, I mean, it isn't, you, I mean, there's a point where you grow in something that you have a vested interest in, especially if you're teaching it. You're like, I've seen, you know, if you were a fine artist painter, you've seen many bowls of fruit. you've seen it's been covered. And you're just like, okay, but we got to get through the bowls of fruit if you're going to learn how to make the next thing. Absolutely. And so that's, I think...
What's amazing is that because of the internet, kids don't have to go out to a bar. They don't have to go out to a club to find dance music. And they readily find dance music online. And it's amazing because they end up making music at, like, the age of 12. I had a kid in my class who was 8. The youngest I've taught has been 6 years old. I had an 8-year-old that I taught. And his parents were like, yeah, when he was playing, I was just like, his parents and I was talking to him, and his parents were like, yeah, he's been bothering us for about 4 years to learn how to DJ. He was four. He was 4 years old. And it helps that Seattle has we have a dance music radio station that is run by high school students.
What station is that?
C89.5. It's run by Nate. yes. C89.5.
Okay.
C as in cat, yes. Okay. You've been around since the 80s. They broke the song from Greece, You're the One That I Love. They were the first person, they were the first, like, radio station to really break it and be like, this is a great song. And they kind of made it a hit. They were one of the first stations to play Lady Gaga. And I definitely hear music on there that I'm like, I am too old for that.
Like, so what I'm missing though is that it's so the dance music that you're talking about is mostly sampled, but it's sampled from stuff like old musicals or Lady Gaga or whoever the newest version of Beyonce is. Though I understand Beyonce is still the current version of Beyonce.
The Grease thing is, like, it was just a radio station, and they just liked the song You're the One That I Love from the Grease movie soundtrack. Not sampled, just playing the song like a radio station.
Okay.
And they broke the song nationally, but the idea that a high school radio station broke a song is the kind of, like, interesting discovery that has happened many times in music and just over time. And it's
does C89.5 play dance music now, or is it because is it what the high school kids are listening to, or is it just pop music with
they play different genres? They even have a moody goth show on Sunday that's older because they have older DJs. It's just that kids are involved with the running of the station, like that show Kids Songs. There was that, like, weird public access, the public TV show about kids running a TV station.
Oh, okay.
And but yeah, that's, it's really interesting, but it's not as much sampling as there is synthesized music, like synthesizers and drum machines.
Okay. So,
because samples became, people used them, but then got sued for using them. Album that I was going to recommend to you is a group called The Avalanches.
Okay.
And the name of the record is Since I Left You. Is the most samples. It is over 1,000 samples. The rights, the liner notes is just fine print. It looks like terms and conditions, how many different lines of rights reserved there is on the back of it. But it's chilled out. It's super chilled, like, excellent music. And, it's my biggest influence in terms of DJing. And it's from, like, 2000, and it's super mellow music that I think you really enjoy, and it's just my favorite album of all time.
Okay. Well, wow. Well, that's kind of amazing. And have they done other, the Avalanches, have they
Took a 17, they took a 15-year break and came back, and, like, they've started putting out new stuff, and it's good, too, but it's not... It's not the same. It's more having people, guests, singers, sing little clips and stuff. Okay. But the, have you ever heard of the folk band The Roaches?
Yes.
So The Roaches are a group that my dad grew me up on. There's a Tiny Toon Adventures episode that has The Roaches as roaches.
Yes.
And I highly recommend that if you can find it. That's how I found their music, but they were recently sampled. They recently sampled the sisters. The Avalanches sampled them in a song. And the sisters, one of the sisters passed away, and they thought it was the coolest fucking thing for the sampling to be done because it made it seem like the sister was doing a duet with these other people. And the idea of her still making music after her passing, they just really absolutely enjoyed and loved about it being sampled. And that's kind of more the sampling that's happening now. It's more like kind of involved with the artist that you're sampling.
Do you think it's new music? Like, you know how, like, hip-hop is a sort of a new kind of genre?
Mm-hmm.
So, is dance music just sort of like a sentence that keeps going and changes and is poetry that just is another stanza? Or do you think it's like a new poem?
I would say it's all cyclical. Almost all of the things that...
Because they strip it down and it comes back to something else kind of thing, or?
Basically what it is that, let's say, a 20-year-old is making music now. Let's say that 20-year-old dude, because it's a lot of dudes, that 20-year-old dude was listening to maybe 10 years ago was the early 2000s. So he is influenced by the music he grew up on in the 2000s. And that is inspired by older music. So generally, things build up in terms of elements. Like, there will be just a build of all of these elements. And then eventually, kids are... The next generation of kids are like, I don't like all of that. I'm just going to simplify it. And so it's just these cyclical waves of lots of elements and then very stripped down. And so it just goes from complex to very simple... over and over, and that's been the history of dance music, really.
Right. It's so weird about because dance as its own music, you know, like there's rock and roll, there's jazz, there's swing, there's hip hop, and the country and western or whatever. And the thing is like country and western has bled into rock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, symphony music has become more rock-like as well, too, where it's not, it seems like the electrifying of the instruments themselves have sort of affected absolutely every single kind of music.
I mean, because that's like a, and then, like, you can hear it in rock music. The same kind of thing happens where it's like, super heavy, and then it'll become super, like, then it'll become very popular to be super soft. And, like, you see that in, like, a band of Montreal, or these, like, very kind of, we've got a washboard and a piccolo kind of bands. Like, you've got...
Who doesn't want a washboard and a piccolo? If they can make it work, make it work.
I don't know if you've ever been at a concert before one of those bands.
You could just stop that sentence... have you ever been to a concert before? Anyway,
so basically what happens if people have sound checks, there's like a sound check for this, and so you have people, you know, the sound person being like, okay, play a little guitar, we need all of these elements to work of your jug band.
Okay.
And what's really funny is if you're ever around for one of these huge bands, then you can hear a very conceited hipster dude being like, I need more washboard. I need less I need less fiddle back here. I need more viola, less fiddle, more violin. You've never heard somebody like aggressively ask for more penny whistle.
Yes. I you know there was a jug band that I went and saw every night in the summer of 1989.
It was the only entertainment in town. You got electricity in 1995 in your town, right?
It was 1989. I was in Provincetown, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod, and it was the bar attached to the restaurant I worked at.
Mm.
When I say restaurant, we're talking hot dog stand, and we could start drinking at noon. And so by the time I got off at 9, I was hammered. And so I would just stumble to the surf club, which was right on the bay, and you could get some food and you could listen to this jug band. And I made them play Taj Mahal every night, and they fucking hated me.
You said jug band, and you didn't. I already knew that you could start drinking at noon. Like you said, jug band. If there's a jug band around, if you hear it, if it's in distance, then you're allowed to start drinking then.
Yeah, and it's a gay resort town, which entirely is dedicated to drinking at noon. So it was an intense 3 summers. I always thought it was 2, and then I remembered that I was just drunk for that last one. Anyway, but it was steady work, and it was worth every moment. Hey, so we're close to an hour here.
Okay.
Andy. Yes, Andy Wanzio, everybody. Andy I. Wanzio. And what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to follow her on the Instagram, the Twitter, and figure it out. But so you would recommend this Avalanche album?
Yes, the Avalanches. Since I left you.
Yes.
That's the thing I would recommend the most. I think it's a gorgeous album. It's great for summer. It's a summer album. It's a great album for just driving around.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'll give it a shot for sure. I always try at least once. I listen. And the only story I tell over and over again is when Marie Valeriano was on and gave me 108 U2 songs.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Because
I told them, just 8 songs, man. Just 8 songs. Whatever it is that you love, I can only take 8. And he gave me a USB stick with 108 songs on it. And so then I had an empty USB stick that I could reuse. So
108 versions of the same song is what you had.
I don't mind U2. There's, you know, and his dorkdom was U2, and we are supportive. So,
okay. I like Murray. I don't...
Yeah, you gotta love Murray. And it's just everybody loves a different band and different kinds of music. I know nothing about all of them. So welcome to another great musical episode of the Dork Forest Rangers. You've chosen wisely, as per usual. I have had a lovely time. Andy, thanks so much for doing the show.
No problem. It was about I was listening to past music episodes, and it was the same amount of you not knowing what sound is. And then living in a hole other than jug bands.
Well, last episode I admitted that I'm listening to the soundtrack to Frozen 2 a lot. Anyway, so thanks for being on the show, everybody. And thanks for listening to the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?